In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for Wednesday, September 14th, 2011 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Wednesday in the 3 o'clock hour is Pentagon Solutions, where we dig into the issues the Pentagon is dealing with, and we talk about solutions to those issues with both people from inside the Pentagon, outside the Pentagon, and industry. And I'm very pleased to welcome back to the program today Catherine Hammack. She is the Assistant Secretary of the Army for Installation, Energy, and Environment. It's great to see you again, Madam Secretary. Thanks for coming in.
Good to see you, Charlie.
I mentioned just a few minutes before we went on the air that we are, I have business at the Pentagon in a couple of weeks. You mentioned that your office is right where the plane struck on 9/11. We started talking about the memorials and so on. Talk about what you've seen right outside your window over the last week or so as we've observed the anniversary, because that's a fascinating perspective to me.
Every morning I look out the window and I see the Pentagon Memorial there, and that is a memorial to those who died in the plane crash. It's a series of benches oriented in order of year that that person was born. So at the far end, there are three benches that are from those infants and very young children who died in the plane crash. And those benches are facing toward the building in the direction that the plane arrived. And then in the middle, you see a lot of benches that are facing away from the building, those who died in the building, 125 people. This week, there were wreaths laid on every bench, and it was interesting to look out at the people, and certainly there have been an increased number of people who've toured the Pentagon Memorial and paid respects to those who gave their lives without really knowing why.
That just has to be a terrific feeling to think about what people have been willing to do. Think about the rescue effort that took place right where you sit every single day. And then as we went through, we have been doing our ongoing coverage of 9/11, a government changed over the last couple of weeks in anticipation of and then observance of the anniversary. To just have all of that stuff right foreground for you every single day has to really be an amazing experience.
It really is. And I have a picture in my office featured very prominently of what it looked like shortly afterwards. And so I see that every day, and it reminds me of why we need the military, because there are those who wish us harm, and they wish us harm every day. And it's a good thing that on this 10th anniversary that we didn't see that. And I think that is because we have stepped up our security in the United States. Everyone's awareness has increased of that threat that is out there of those who wish us all harm.
We did indeed make it through, thankfully, uneventfully, the 10th anniversary of 9/11. And we'll move to some of the things that have taken place in your area of expertise since you were here at the beginning of August the last time. It's a pleasure to have you back. One of the things that you mentioned when you were here, we talked a little bit about the formation of the Energy Initiatives Office Task Force. The operational date objective was September 15th, which is tomorrow. Are you ready to go?
Absolutely. We're standing up the task force with a team, and everyone's ready, willing, and able to move out. What the task force will be doing is focusing on getting renewable energy, very large-scale renewable energy projects on Army installations. If you think about the Army, we have 15 million acres of land. And as we've looked at it, there are about 5 million acres of land that serve as a buffer area. We need that buffer because we're a little noisy when we get out there. And so it's a buffer between us and the communities. But that buffer land could use a useful purpose. They could be wind turbines or solar power plants. Some of our range clearing activities generate a lot of biomass that we could use for a biomass power plant. Other waste to energy instead of waste going into landfills. We also have an opportunity with geothermal and some of the land that we have stewardship over. There is some hot water underground that could generate electricity.
Geothermal is an area that seems to be, at least for folks that are, I think, from the outside looking in, it's kind of the forgotten energy source, isn't it? People focus a lot, I think, on the solar and wind and so on, and geothermal doesn't get as much attention, it seems.
Well, it's not in as many places, mm-hmm. and in order for geothermal to be really effective, it has to be at a fairly hot temperature.
Mm-hmm.
So when you get below about 160 degrees Fahrenheit, the ability to generate electricity is severely diminished.
Explain how geothermal works for the uninitiated.
Certainly. If you think of what we do with fossil fuel power plants, we burn that fossil fuel to heat up water to make steam to drive turbines.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're using geothermal, you can take that steam that is coming from the ground and use that to directly drive the turbines. So therefore, you don't need the fossil fuels.
Mm-hmm.
But geothermal is a technology or strategy that's also used in what we call ground source heat pumps. If you think of an air conditioning system rejects heat from inside the building so that the inside of the building is cooler. That heat can be rejected to the ground, which is about at a constant 55 degrees. So we have some ground source heat pump systems that are making use of the thermal energy or the buffering energy of the earth.
The website for the Army Energy Initiatives Task Force is armyeio.com, and we've got it linked up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. You've got a slogan on there on each of those pages that refers to what you were talking about the land. We've got the land and the demand. And what I take away from that is that's an invitation to industry to say, help us out. We're ready to go. Is that what you were shooting for with that slogan?
Absolutely, it is. We are going to serve the American public. We are a long-term tenant of many of these installations for over a century in mm-hmm. some of them. So we're going to be there with a need for energy. And as the American populace knows, our energy use has increased. We have computers and cell phones and a lot of technologies that use energy. So we know we're going to have the demand for energy for multiple years. And so we're looking to partner with the private industry, the private sector, to invest in renewable energy projects, large-scale ones, on Army installations.
So give me some nuts and bolts about the task force. Who's on it, what you're going to be doing, and so forth.
Well, the task force is forming, and that's the announcement for tomorrow. So,
okay.
But it will be led by the Deputy Assistant Secretary for the Army for Energy and Sustainability, and that's Mr. Richard Kidd,
mm-hmm.
who joined us about 6 months ago from the Department of Energy. And he has a lot of experience in energy and renewables. John Powers, who's sitting here with me today, is also going to be on it, leading some of our strategic outreach. And our strategic outreach is to identify technologies, maybe some nascent technologies, that we can use in the Army. Because one of the things that the Army and the military has a reputation for is developing the nascent technologies, emerging technologies, because we have the scale that makes some of these new technologies viable.
Mm-hmm. That's got to be really attractive to industry, too, if it's a situation where I might have one or two opportunities to have my technology used and purchased. That's not meant necessarily very attractive on the scale of the entire U.S. Army. And we'll talk later in the program, too, then, about connecting to the other branches of the military. That's a pretty attractive market, I imagine.
It certainly is, and it's amazing. Since we made the announcements, or since the Secretary of the Army made the announcement in August, there has been a phenomenal response from private industry, bringing us ideas and strategies and helping us to lay the foundation for what we think is going to be a tremendous advantage to our nation.
Catherine Hammock is my guest on Pentagon Solutions today. She's the Assistant Secretary of the Army for Installations, Energy, and the Environment. We'll continue our conversation in a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The Government IT Solutions Spotlight is brought to you by CDWG.
The General Services Administration is closer than ever before to going paperless and accepting new offers and modifications to their contract schedules program. Houston Taylor is GSA's Assistant Commissioner for Acquisition Management in the Federal Acquisition Service. He says vendors under the technology schedule, known as Schedule 70, must submit all new offers and any modifications to their contracts electronically starting October 1st. GSA will push the other scheduled contracts paperless during 2012.
Desktops, tablets, smartphones, thin clients. If you're in federal IT, these are your challenges. Visit cdwg.com/configuration to learn how our experts can help you meet them all with configured, imaged, asset-tagged client computing solutions. CDWG. People who get it.
Visit cdwg.com to learn how HP's ProBook and EliteBook lines of notebooks can help keep your agency mobile and productive.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on Federal News Radio at 10 a.m. Please join me this week for my special guests, John Dedon, who's my partner at Odin Feldman & Pittleman, and Brian Kennedy, Vice President of Business Development at Wilson Bennett Capital Management and Cardinal Wealth Management. The show is brought to you by Odin Feldman & Pittleman, a full-service law firm located in Fairfax, Virginia, serving the entire D.C. area. Visit us on the web at oflaw.com.
Is your agency consolidating data centers? Want an instant snapshot to see which servers are really doing useful work? Looking for ways to inventory all applications and cut software costs? 1E, a leader in IT efficiency software, specializes in application and server rationalization, the first step in the consolidation process. Make better decisions about decommissioning or virtualization. Go to 1E.com to find out how they can help. That's the number one, the letter E.com. 1E, empowering IT efficiency and cost reduction for today's federal agency.
There are barbecue double burgers with mayo and bacon and cheese. There are 60-inch HD plasmas with cinema surround and 3D. There are mandatory conference calls at 8 p.m. on Saturdays. Ugh. There are really comfortable overstuffed sofas that recline and vibrate and have cup holders and coolers built right in. And there are idiots behind the wheels of cars all over the road, and somehow they are always right there in front of you. There are moments when it feels as if the whole world is conspiring against your health, which is why there is Kaiser Permanente. We can be a partner. We can be a friend. A voice of moderation in a world gone excess and insane. So the next time you're faced with the choice between a televised marathon of vapid vixens or the chance to get a little fresh air, visit everybodywalk.org and we'll be there to help you thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
I'm Amy Morris. Here's a look at Thursday morning's Federal Drive. The 2012 budget, a continuing resolution, a stopgap spending measure for the FAA, the BRAC deadline. We touch on all of these topics with Virginia Democratic Congressman Jim Moran. And an update for you on the markup of the DHS authorization bill from the Senate Homeland Security and Government Affairs Committee. That and more Thursday morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Catherine Hammack, the Assistant Secretary of the Army for Installations, Energy, and Environment on Pentagon Solutions today. We talked about the Army Energy Initiatives Task Force that launches tomorrow, Madam Secretary. How does that connect with what we talked about a lot when you were here before, which is net zero?
Certainly, our net zero strategy is to have a installation use as much energy as they generate. So that makes it net zero. Mm-hmm. But the first part of a net zero strategy is to use less energy, to reduce your energy consumption. And we have a lot of our installations focused on that. But the next part of it is, after you've reduced and reused and recycled as much energy as you can, is to make energy from renewable strategies, renewable technologies, and alternate technologies. So this is really a follow-on to that strategy to ensure that our installations are able to operate should there be acts of man, terrorists, or acts of nature that could impede the mission. And the primary mission of our installations is to serve the American public and protect the American public.
You talked about the competition among some of the installations when you were here before, some of the installations that got in on the net zero start off the pilot project, and some of the installations that didn't make the cut and said, that's okay, we're going to do it anyway. And I thought that that attitude was really neat and kind of symbolizes what people think about when they think about the military. You went to one of those installations not long after you were here. You were at Fort Leonard Wood. What did you see when you were down there?
Well, Fort Leonard Wood is an amazing installation, and they are working really hard. They've recovered from a tornado, and a tornado went right through and took out a whole bunch of buildings. Took out barracks, took out some residences, but it came over a holiday period right around the New Year when a lot of these weren't occupied. And so we did not have people in those homes at that time, so we had no injury, although we had a lot of damage to our facilities. But as part of their recovery, they're looking at energy efficiency. And at Fort Leonard Wood, we do a lot of training, and we have our Prime Power School there. They're training people on how to put efficient power plants in on our bases, a lot of our contingency bases in theater, so that we don't have as much JP-8 or diesel fuel that's needed to power them. So they're setting up a test facility there that's going to be part of their training to utilize alternate technologies. They've got some wind turbines out there. They've got some solar panels, some storage mechanisms, because, you know, the sun doesn't shine at night. The moon might be out pretty bright. It was bright last night. Mm-hmm. But we need to store energy so that we can use it at times when the wind's not blowing or the sun's not out.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that I saw that you talked about at Fort Leonard Wood, we talked about net zero energy. But you also talked about net zero water, which is something that we didn't cover when you were here the last time. Same idea, I imagine.
It is, really. But the water idea is a little bit different, because right now in the earth, 98% of the water is briny and not drinkable.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to treat it in some way to make it potable. Of that 2% remaining, 1% is easily accessible, and the other 1% is pretty hard to get.
Mm-hmm.
So if you think of it, water is a very limited resource on our planet. What we want our installations to do is to use as much water as they inject back into the same aquifer that they're withdrawing water from,
mm-hmm.
because that puts you at a net zero strategy. We shouldn't be irrigating our land or our landscaping with drinking water that you've used energy to treat, to pump, to distribute, and then to treat at the other end. So making our installations think a lot more about the water as a resource and the energy component in water. So when you go closer to net zero water, you're going to reduce your energy consumption at the same time.
You say making our installations think about what they're doing, essentially. That seems to be the biggest thing, is shifting mindset, shifting how you view operations. Because I don't think there's any of the stuff that you're talking about that's particularly controversial. I don't think there's anybody that thinks that conserving water and conserving energy is really a bad idea. So the challenge then, I imagine, becomes, how do we get people to focus on this, not just when you're there, but all the time, and really embed this into the way that the installations do business?
And that's a lot of the education. That's why we're taking it to our schools and Fort Leonard Wood with their training there, is taking it to the students. One of our net zero installations is up at, West Point. And so our students there can use alternative energy and see the solar energy and learn from what's going on in their own buildings and the way they live. But what's interesting is October, and we're going into October right now. It's just a few short
days
away.
Don't say that. I'm not a fall fan.
Well, the nice thing about October is, for the last 20 years, our presidents have declared October as National Energy Awareness Month. And the theme for this year is turn words into action, turn action into results, and save energy, save money. And that's really something that we want every one of our soldiers and civilians to do is be a power manager and take responsibility for the energy and the water they use and understand that it has a direct impact on mission and the sustainability of the mission. Because if we do not have access to energy and we do not have access to water, then we're unable to do our primary mission.
I'm reminded as I wrote a news story for later on in the program about the Senate Appropriations Committee's funding for DOD for fiscal 2012. One of the pieces that I put in there was the department's looking for $350 billion in savings in the next 10 years. That's not a little trim around the edges here or there. So this kind of thing becomes really important, not just to an energy strategy, but to an overall DOD strategy, to a warfighting strategy.
It absolutely does. And when we look at it, we look at it in several different ways, both our permanent installations and our contingency installations. And when you go out into theater, into Iraq or Afghanistan, and look at the logistical tail that it takes to deliver the water and to deliver the fuel to our soldiers and our outposts. Right now, 70 to 80% of our convoy weight is fuel and water. And sometimes it takes as much fuel to deliver the fuel.
Yeah.
So the more we employ alternate technologies, the better off we'll be. And we're doing that. We have a unit right now that has deployed with rechargeable systems for their night vision, for their radios, for their GPS systems. And they are fuel cells, and they are solar blankets that can be unrolled to recharge a laptop or other technologies.
Pretty amazing stuff. You use the term save energy, save money. Are the rank and file people in the Army, both civilian and uniform, getting on board easily with the idea that those two things are really connected, they're linked, and they're almost the same thing now, and it's not just, we want to save energy because it's a nice idea, but that this is now really almost implicit in the mission?
Well, we say save energy, save money, save lives.
Mm-hmm.
Because right now, one in every 46 convoys experiences a casualty. And that casualty could be to a soldier or military personnel or a civilian or a contractor. And so really saving energy is very critical to our mission. And I'm finding that our younger soldiers are really getting it. They've grown up in an environment where resources are important. And you were talking about your 11-year-old son.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're teaching it at school.
Yeah.
They are growing up understanding it, and sometimes they shame us by reminding us that we need to recycle or to turn out the lights.
I can testify to that one, absolutely. My guest is Catherine Hammack. She's the Assistant Secretary of the Army for Installations, Energy, and Environment. We'll continue our conversation in just a second on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
NASA has created its own data portal to consolidate its vast warehouse of digital information and share it with the public. Data.nasa.gov starts off with a collection of 500 data sets on topics ranging from climate to aeronautics to life sciences. The Open Data Project also includes a selection of widgets and tools to manipulate and search for information. NASA says it receives more than 4 terabytes of digital data just from its spacecraft missions every day.
General Dynamics Information Technology is dedicated to providing the latest, highest quality information technology services and resources to help organizations meet their mission objectives. Large-scale IT systems and communications networks are the strategic and operational heart of defense, intelligence, civilian government, and private business. They require the expertise of a company that delivers results. General Dynamics Information Technology. Information technology and professional services. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com.
I work to help our nation, and my work makes an impact. I help my government and our allies keep citizens safe from terrorism and cyber warfare. I work for ManTech International Corporation.
Around the world and at home, ManTech employees work side by side with our troops and government to protect our homeland. We have more than 10,000 professionals doing rewarding work every day. If you're an IT professional, security expert, intelligence analyst, or engineer, apply today at mantech.com/careers.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power, Grantham University, and MetLife. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m. right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Enterprise, Macon Island, Truxton, and Texas. These names grace some of the most famous ships ever put to sea. Ships that safeguard America's freedom and have all been built by the newest name in the industry, Huntington Ingalls Industries. Huntington Ingalls is a 125-year-old new company created from Newport News Shipbuilding and Ingalls Shipbuilding. Huntington Ingalls, a legend reborn. To find out more, visit HuntingtonIngalls.com.
Omega-3 and Alzheimer's. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Nicholas Garlow with HHS HealthBeat. A new study shows omega-3 does not slow the progression of Alzheimer's. Patients were given DHA, a component of fish oil that has a specific omega-3 fatty acid. DHA had no effect on memory retention. Author Joseph Quinn is a researcher at Oregon Health and Science University.
Once somebody has a diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease, there is probably not a value in giving them omega-3 supplements for the sake of slowing down Alzheimer's disease.
Despite the results, supplements can have positive effects.
There may be value with respect to these other health considerations, such as the heart and blood vessels.
The study in the Journal of the American Medical Association was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Nicholas Garlow.
In April, former federal CIO Vivek Kundra gave an update on the 25-point plan to reform information technology. During that update, all but two objectives were on track, including reducing duplicate data and consolidating data centers. With Kundra's departure and Steve Van Roekel's appointment, how will agencies continue to drive IT management reform in 2012? Join AFSCIA Bethesda September 22nd at the Bethesda North Marriott for an update. Register today at afsciabethesda.org/sepbreakfast.
Headed to Fort Detrick or the I-270 Technology Corridor, Federal News Radio can be heard crystal clear on 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. It's the same great station, just on an added frequency. Get the latest news about the federal government and government contractors. Hear exclusive interviews with the movers and shakers in the federal arena. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM or 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. Federal News Radio, your source for federal news now.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest on Pentagon Solutions today, which you get every Wednesday in the 3 o'clock hour on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, is Catherine Hammack. She's the Assistant Secretary of the Army for Installations, Energy, and the Environment. We talked at the beginning of the program about the Army Energy Initiatives Task Force and how you're going to be looking to industry for some of the solutions to some of the energy initiatives that you're undertaking. Talk a little bit more in depth, though, about the interaction that you have with industry already, the ways that you're already working with industry, and how you're going to be looking to them even more for some of these solutions.
A lot of our installations have been working with the private sector to bring renewable energy onto the Army installations. We already have over 120 different projects that have been up and operating for many years, and we have a lot more in the works. But these are small-scale projects on the roof of a building or a parking garage or a shade structure. When you get to large scale, that is a little bit beyond the skill set of the garrison staff, who's really focused on operating that garrison. And so what the Energy Initiatives Task Force does is bring in that expertise and bring in the additional skills to augment the garrison to identify where you could put in a large system, what kind of resources are or are not available, what kind of technology, natural resources are available, maybe doing some test wells or met towers are put up to gauge the amount of wind that is blowing. So we're going to help the garrisons identify and frame the opportunities so that when we put them out to bid, the private sector has a biddable project.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, we're going to be having some industry days to invite the private sector to come in and give us some ideas, strategies, and technologies.
Mm-hmm.
So we're really looking forward to the private sector to advance strategies and also to invest in the Army, because we do have the land. And to a lot of developers, that can be a restriction, is finding land to put up large-scale renewable projects.
Mm-hmm. I saw a story not too long ago that there's a system installed at Fort Benning that uses landfill methane to generate clean energy. How do you decide at each installation what's appropriate for that particular installation? What's a good fit among the various choices that you have for renewable energy?
We've worked with the National Energy Resource Lab to identify on a very large scale where the best strategies and resources are: wind, solar, geothermal. And then you take it to a local level. What is already working in that community? What kind of systems are being installed in that area that developers are looking for expansion? What kind of resources are the utilities looking forward to? And partnering with utilities is certainly going to be a key part to this, as utilities aren't really going to be building the coal-fired power plants anymore.
Mm-hmm.
They're looking for the renewable energy systems. And by using Army lands, that helps reduce the cost of the whole renewable system, and it's a win-win for both sides.
When you look at what's already working in a community, then you're looking at the entire community, not just what's working maybe on base or in close proximity to the base. You're looking at the whole area, region, I suppose. Is that right?
Absolutely. And some states have policies that are very inviting to renewable technologies. It could be a policy or strategy that comes from the state level. It could be a policy or strategy that the utility has to encourage those kind of investments. So not only are we going to look where the resources are, but we're going to look for communities that are welcoming of these investments. One of those is Hawaii, and it's very interesting. You get over to Hawaii, and their energy costs anywhere from 32 to 42 cents a kilowatt hour, where here we're at 8 to 10 on the continental United States.
Mm-hmm.
And they've also decided that their future investments are only going to be in renewable technologies. So we have a very good relationship with the utility there and are working on some very large-scale wind and solar projects.
What does an organization like in a public utility or some other operation in a particular area have to do to get on your radar screen to let you know that they're out there and they want to cooperate with you?
One of the things we did this summer is, in partnership with the Army Corps of Engineers, we issued a sources sought notice,
mm-hmm.
which was looking for companies that have the interest and the technology to bring to the Army. And this really starts our acquisition process for the Energy Initiatives Task Force. What was very interesting to both the Army Corps of Engineers and the Army as a whole is they had five times the number of respondents than they anticipated.
Mm.
So
there's a lot of demand out there.
Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of people looking to partner with the Army. We know that this EI task force will help streamline the acquisition process and make us easier to deal with. Because when you're doing it at a local level in the contracting, it can get a little bit overwhelming to that garrison.
Yeah, that's where I was going to go next, too, is that I imagine for, say, a utility in Georgia that's trying to deal with Fort Benning, working it through the Army acquisition process is not something they're really familiar with either. Are there any tools that you have in your arsenal to help them, to help streamline that process, or is that part of what the task force is going to be working on?
That is part of what the task force is doing, is putting together tools that help in the decision-making process. It also develops some consistency, and it helps remind people of what are the important variables. For an instance, we might have the land to put on a renewable energy project that is much larger than the needs of that installation, so it can meet some of the needs of the community. But in order for it to meet the needs of the community, there have to be power lines that are available to distribute that power.
Mm-hmm.
So as part of the package that is put together in our due diligence, it's going to be identifying the available resources that are there for the larger scale projects.
So it sounds like the goal is to essentially have a package that you can present to anybody that wants to come to you and say, pretty much, here's what you need to do. If you do all these things, we can move on to the next step rather quickly.
Absolutely. And to have some consistency in the request for proposal process or the request for information process, and to have done our homework to ensure that what we're giving to the developer and asking for them to bid on is a biddable and a financeable document.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's going to take an investment to give the Army 25% of our energy from renewable resources by 2025, and that's our goal. And so the private sector, in order to invest in projects on Army installations, is going to want to make sure that it's a project that makes financial sense. It's got to make financial sense for the developer. It's got to make financial sense for the Army. Because if it's not cost effective, then it's not a win for either of us.
When you lay out the year 2025 as a goal, somebody who maybe doesn't follow these issues will go, man, that's like 13 years from now. That's a long way out. In Army time and in contracting time, that's not so long from now, is it?
No, it's not. In some of these projects, we hope to accelerate, because there is a pipeline. There are installations that have started to work on some of these projects, and they need the additional assistance that the Energy Initiatives Task Force can give them. So we hope to accelerate projects through the pipeline faster and get them out to bid, and maybe we'll be able to have some out to bid within the next year, which would be a speedy time frame.
That's really fast when it comes to contracting, sure. Catherine Hammack is my guest. She's the Assistant Secretary of the Army for Installations, Energy, and Environment on Pentagon Solutions on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We'll be back in a moment.
The Government IT Solutions Spotlight is brought to you by CDWG.
The General Services Administration is closer than ever before to going paperless and accepting new offers and modifications to their contract schedules program. Houston Taylor is GSA's Assistant Commissioner for Acquisition Management in the Federal Acquisition Service. He says vendors under the technology schedule, known as Schedule 70, must submit all new offers and any modifications to their contracts electronically starting October 1st. GSA will push the other schedule contracts paperless during 2012.
Desktops, tablets, smartphones, thin clients. If you're in federal IT, these are your challenges. Visit cdwg.com/configuration to learn how our experts can help you meet them all with configured, imaged, asset-tagged client computing solutions. CDWG. People who get it.
Visit cdwg.com to learn how Windows 7 can improve performance and reliability while providing greater security and manageability.
Attention civilian employees of the intelligence community and the Departments of Defense and State. You could be eligible for affordable term life insurance from GEBA, the Government Employees Benefit Association, with coverage issued by Prudential. Learn more about this important benefit for government employees at GEBA.com/term life. That's GEBA.com/term life. Group term life coverage for GEBA is issued by the Prudential Insurance Company of America, 751 Broad Street, Newark, New Jersey, 07102. Contract series 83500.
Newsmakers on In Depth with Francis Rose.
House Homeland Security Committee Ranking Member Benny Thompson.
Despite being the new kid on the block, according to the recent GAO report, things are moving along. One of the positive aspects of putting the department together and over $300 billion in resources in it is that we've not had a successful incident on the homeland since 9/11.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/in-depth.
Sneeze and bark. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. Can sneezers and barkers live in the same house? People who are allergic to dog dander but who love dogs might want a dog that's hypoallergenic, which means it won't create as many allergy-triggering particles. Good luck with that. Researchers at Henry Ford Hospital in Detroit collected dust samples from homes with breeds that have been considered hypoallergenic and breeds that were not. They found no difference in allergen levels. Researcher Christine Cole Johnson.
Based on our study and also based on some previous studies of dogs, there doesn't seem to be a hypoallergenic breed of dog.
She says allergic reaction will vary with the individual person and the individual dog. The study in the American Journal of Rhinology and Allergy was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Catherine Hammack, the Assistant Secretary of the Army for Installations, Energy, and Environment. And when you were here before, we talked a little bit about the interaction between the Army and the other branches of the military. Since you've been here, the story is we reported on about the Air Force setting up an all-electronic fleet at one of their bases. Talk about the interaction between the Army, the Air Force, and the Navy, and how you guys share ideas, how you drive innovation together in the areas that you're working on.
In some of the areas, we have enabled one of the services to lead. And in biofuels, it's really the Navy that is the lead there. And talking about the Great Green Fleet and the amount of fuel that they use, followed by the Air Force, they're really the drivers. And so if you look at the Department of Defense, the Army utilizes 21% of the energy in the Department of Defense. So by having those two others lead in the biofuels, and we take their input and we do testing on our own equipment as well, but they are the lead there. When you talk about the non-tactical vehicles, we've given the Air Force a lead there. And so they have a member of their team who's doing a lot of outreach on it. Although in non-tactical vehicles, the Army has the largest fleet. And currently over 40% of the vehicles in the Army fleet are clean and green. And this is a combination of electric vehicles, low-speed electric vehicles, hybrid vehicles. Right now, we are the largest user of hybrid electric vehicles in the Department of Defense. So we have a commitment that we will reach a 50% reduction in petroleum use in non-tactical vehicles by 2015. And certainly electric vehicles are part of that equation, but hybrid vehicles are also part of that as well.
How do you decide, or is there even a decision-making process when you determine which one of the branches may lead on a particular area, or is it just self-evident, like the examples that you talked about?
Sometimes it's skills, strategies, manpower, availability. There's a wide range of things. We do get together on a very regular basis. All the assistant secretaries who work in installations and energy get together, share ideas, share strategies. All of our deputy assistant secretaries have worked together at some time. I've worked with all of them. It's a great team, and there's a great camaraderie there. Still a little bit of competition, but as we talked a little bit, that competition should stay on the football field and not in the building.
What do you see, though, at the Army as some of the challenges that you have that maybe your colleagues at Navy, Marine Corps, and Air Force don't have to deal with as much, or what do you have maybe an easier time of than they do because of the natures of the forces of the branches of the military?
Well, one of the big issues for the Army is soldier power solutions, because although we have more floating vehicles than the Navy and we have more airborne vehicles than the Air Force, we are really driven by our soldiers. And one of our concerns is that a soldier on a three-day patrol may carry about seven different types of battery weighing over 15 pounds. And so we are concerned about the weight that our soldiers carry. And we have soldiers that are testing a variety of solutions to lighten that power load or lighten that energy load, ranging from portable fuel cells to solar blankets to rechargeable batteries and power management solutions that enable them to reduce the amount of replacement batteries they carry by having rechargeable solutions. So we have a lot of focus on the soldier. And you know that in theater, we're seeing a lot of IED attacks. So our tactical vehicles have had to be up armored. Mm-hmm. And certainly their fuel consumption has increased. So we're trying to figure out what we can do, and we have a team that is really focusing on utilizing various technologies, power management solutions in vehicles and tactical vehicles. And we have a TARDEC, which is located up in the Detroit area, working with the automotive industry to identify ways that our tactical vehicles can be more efficient, yet still give our soldiers the kind of protection they need.
And I imagine that's a tremendous challenge and opportunity at the same time for industry, because if somebody can come up with a solution for that for you, I bet you that could be moved through the acquisition pipeline pretty quickly.
Absolutely. And we do have a alternate acquisition pipeline. We call that the Rapid Equipping Force, or REF. And the REF team is able to take solutions rapidly through, get them into the theater so that they can be tested in a live manner and solve a certain solution. And certainly the MRAPs were one of those technologies and strategies that was brought through the acquisition process fairly rapidly.
Catherine Hammock's my guest. She's the Assistant Secretary of the Army for Installations, Energy, and the Environment. We'll wrap up our conversation in just a moment from now on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Do you know us? We employ more than 70,000 people in more than 800 locations throughout the United States. Through our network of suppliers, we indirectly enable tens of thousands of American jobs. Tens of thousands. Jobs that put food on the table. Jobs that put kids through college. Jobs that keep our economy going. And yet, many of you don't even know who we are. Our name is United Technologies. We are Carrier, Hamilton Sunstrand, Otis, Pratt & Whitney, Sikorsky, and UTC Fire and Security. Six businesses united as one powerful company. We may be the biggest unknown company in America, but our jobs power the economy, and our technologies, products, and services power the world. United Technologies. Get to know more about us at UTC.com.
Remember when you tried doing something for the first time? You probably weren't very good at it. On a scale of stinko to virtuoso, chances are you were right down there. But you kept at it, and soon you went from not so hot to halfway decent. Kaiser Permanente reminds you we all start out as beginners, stumbling over our feet, going right instead of left, swinging and missing. So whatever you're curious about, tennis or horseback riding, playing guitar or pole dancing, softball or soccer, forget about being perfect and focus on the fun. The rest will fall into place. So come on, stumblers, bumblers, listen up. It's okay to stink. Just start. Go to thrive.kp.org to find your thing. Kaiser Permanente. We want you and your interests to thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
Is your agency consolidating data centers? Want an instant snapshot to see which servers are really doing useful work? Looking for ways to inventory all applications and cut software costs? 1E, a leader in IT efficiency software, specializes in application and server rationalization, the first step in the consolidation process. Make better decisions about decommissioning or virtualization. Go to 1E.com to find out how they can help. That's the number one, the letter E.com. 1E, empowering IT efficiency and cost reduction for today's federal agencies.
Hi, this is Michelle Moore, the Federal Environmental Executive. I'd like to invite you to join us at the 2011 GreenGov Symposium, co-hosted by the White House Council on Environmental Quality and the Association of Climate Change Officers, for 3 days of cutting-edge educational sessions on the business of sustainability and greening the government. Connect with more than 1,000 of your peers at this year's GreenGov from October 31st to November 2nd in Washington, D.C. For more information and to register online, visit greengov2011.org.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's Pentagon Solutions today on In Depth with Catherine Hammock, the Assistant Secretary of the Army for Installations, Energy, and Environment. And I must say, I'm flattered by your schedule today. We talked a little bit before we went on the air that you started out this morning in Alabama, and you came back here, not just for my show, but to do some other things here in Washington. But for people who have the illusion that people like you just sit at the Pentagon and push paper all day, it's not that at all, is it?
No, it isn't, but I enjoy spending time with the people at the front lines who are doing the hard work. And there's a senior safety symposium going on in Montgomery, Alabama this week. And those are the people who are working hard to ensure that our soldiers have a safe environment, and our civilians and our contractors as well. So we were talking about some of the Army ammunition plants and ensuring that we reduce the number of lost work days due to hazards in the munitions plant. So it's a very serious subject, and I want to let them know that what they do is important every day.
Out of a month, 30 days in a month, how many of them are in Washington? How many of them are traveling to the kinds of things we talked about in this hour?
Sometimes it depends upon Congress. When Congress is out of session, I try and go out and visit installations as much as possible. So I think in the month of August, I was in D.C. about 5 days.
Wow. So you're getting to see exactly what's going on in all of these things.
Absolutely.
In the time that you've traveled in the last month or two, what is something that you've seen that you've walked away from and said, man, I can't even believe that that is happening to the good?
Well, I really admire the creativity of our soldiers. And I had a lot of fun up at Fort Myer, and that's in our backyard.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a soldier so excited about a solution he had there, and it had to do with the horses who work out at Arlington in the funeral processions and handling the waste that comes from the horses in a sustainable manner.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got a composter that's going to save money and turn it into fertilizer to be used on base. So he was very excited about it, and I spent a lot of time in the stable with him.
You just never know where the ideas are going to come from, I guess.
You do not.
It's a pleasure to have you back in the studio. Thank you very much for coming in today.
Good to spend time with you always, Charlie.
Catherine Hammack is the Assistant Secretary of the Army for Installations, Energy, and Environment on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Hour number two of the program right around the corner.